are back. For this session, we have Tammy of Chucklefish, and she's going to be going over marketing masterclass practical tips for indie games on a budget. Tammy, the stage is now yours.
Thank you, Ash. Hi, everyone. How are things going? I hope you are all doing well today. And I'm super, super excited about this talk today. I hope we can all learn something valuable to implement in our daily work life in the indie gaming industry. So I decided to create this marketing masterclass with practical tips for indie game developers on a budget. So let's start. First things first, I am Tammy. My name is Tamiris, but please call me Tammy. I am Brazilian and I have been working with marketing in the gaming industry for 12 years now, and I graduated in social communications. Yes, I have a journalism degree, but I decided to shift my career to marketing with a focus on consumer sciences and branding strategies. I had the chance to work with several gaming companies like Ubisoft, Riot Games, and Chucklefish, where I am a product lead now at the moment here in London. And even though I worked in some big companies in the gaming industry in the past, I think it's important to mention that indie games have always held a special place in my heart. And this leads me to a point that most people think about when I share my career experience. And I think it's important to mention today. But you work at big AAA companies. What do you know about zero budget? Yeah, well, most people don't know. But even though I helped to put the S at Riot Games, I had to learn how to grow from one live service game to five, keeping the costs as low as possible, as if we had only one game. What a challenge. But delivering a high standard of marketing campaigns for five different games as a service with bi-weekly patches with zero extra budget, I think it gave me the experience I needed to apply in the indie gaming industry. So yeah, that's why I decided to create this masterclass and share some of the experiences and learnings that I got throughout this career with you all today. So, cool. You think, I made a game? And now? Well, now is just the beginning of a wild ride in the marketing roller coaster. I know it's not a favorite part for most of the developers. Okay, so I decided to break down this masterclass into three parts. The first one is the homework. That kind of thing you have to do, but usually people hate to do, you know what I mean? In this section, I am planning to cover some important questions that might seem pretty basic, but you would be shocked at how many people never ask them to themselves until they become the elephant in the room. Then they decide to ask themselves. Okay, step one, define and understand your audience. Here are the top four questions you should ask yourself. First one, who is this game for? When you picture your audience, who would play your game? Is more like a casual audience, would be more like a hardcore one. Second one, how does your audience behave? What do they like? What do they dislike? Following that, what do they consume in terms of content? And this is a pretty important one because games became entertainment. And it's really important to discover what your audience consume when it comes to movies, shows, series, and such. And the last one, which platforms do they usually spend their time on? And this is going to help you understand where you can find and connect with them once you need to promote and make people aware of your project. And, you know, can be on TikTok, can be on Reddit. It all depends who is your audience. Okay, the second step. Discover your unique selling point. Okay, it will help you more than you can imagine. Having these answers will help you position your game well and ensure you deliver a product with relevance. First one, what makes your game stand out from the competition? Understand your competition, first of all. See what other games are doing. And I always like to say that there's no shame in learning with the market. Second one, why should people add your game to their Steam wish list? And I decided to bring some data today. Last year, I realized that Steam released more than 14,000 games. It's basically, I don't know, around 50 games released per day. So why should people add your game to their wish list instead of the other 49 games released? You know what I mean? And the last one, what is your secret indie sauce? What is your secret when it comes to your studio or your game? What's something that you only you have? And when we answer these three questions, it would be way easier to discover your unique selling point. Okay, step three. Create your brand positioning. This one is my favorite one, personally. And we have three questions here. How do you want to make people feel when they play your game? And when we ask this question, it's all about the experience that you want to deliver to your audience. The second one, what is the first thing you want people to think when they think about your game? I mean, you have some games that became like a reference for a specific genre or an area. And when you think about these specific games, they represent a specific kind of game. And it's really important for you to keep that in mind when you are releasing your game. And the third one, and this one is my favorite one, is the party classic. If the competition was a party, who would your game be? And I don't know if everyone is familiar with the party classic dynamic, but imagine if there's a party and we have people there, and these people are the indie game companies that we know. And for example, I will start. Chucklefish. Chucklefish arrives at the party. Probably Chucklefish would bring a touch of cheekiness and charm to the party, would captivate everyone with their storytelling and their artistic flair. You might also spot them in a corner showing some charming pixel art games, or maybe a cute TikTok video with dogs. Another example, Devolver. Probably Devolver would be like the life of the party. Picture them like arriving in style, maybe with some flashy or unique accessory. They would be the ones initiating some unconventional party games, keeping the energy high with their humor and jokes. And probably they would be the first ones on the dance floor. When you picture this party, it's going to be way easier for you to create your brand positioning for your studio or even for your game. Okay. We have done the homework. So now it's time to make it happen with zero budget. It's easy to ask questions, but how you can transform them into tangible things. And we're going to cover that in part two. Okay, I decided to bring four important values for you. First one, embrace the indiness, please. Indie games have been delivering memorable experiences in the last years. And that's something only indies can do. And I have to say that, and I think I can say that. Some big AAA companies still wish for that. And we have this thing that only indie companies can offer, and people love that. So don't be afraid of embrace your indie side. Second one, be reachable. Being reachable is one of the key aspects for the indie gaming community. And again, it's something that only the indie game industry can offer. Having the chance to chat with the team or the creator of your favorite game is something that is very, very unique and so important for your audience. So don't be afraid of be a real person. And, you know, it's going to make a total difference to your audience. Third one, build trust. When you share your story, it's so much easier to build this trust with your community and let people be part of your game development with you. And again, when you start sharing, it's way easier for people to connect with you and understand what that project means to you. Last one, show how the magic happens. I mean, you are an indie. You are an indie game studio or an indie game developer. You have to craft boundary-breaking experiences to overcome the challenges in your everyday life. And this is how the magic happens. We create games against all the odds. And again, it's something that only indie game studios and indie game developers would understand. Okay, it's time to talk about platforms and social media. And I know how it feels. It feels everything all at once. And yeah, it's not the Netflix movie, but that's the feeling that we have when it comes to deciding which social media platform we should focus, because every day we have new platforms coming up. And that's why I decided to share a little trick. Please focus your resources and energy on the correct channels to reach the correct audience at the correct time. And I decided to break down into three different sections here. The first one would be the core community hubs. And we are talking about Discord, Reddit, Steam blogs, and forums. These are the main channels to the core community. On Discord, you can create and foster your community. You can ask for feedback. You can even create a playtest group there. You have so many opportunities and ideas to create and keep this community close to you. On Reddit, you can reach new communities depending on the subreddit that you are looking for. And on Steam, and you can have the forums and you can have your Steam blogs. There is the perfect place to share the process with your community, like dev blogs, updates, bug reporting, and such. The next section is the wider community. When you think about a wider audience, you have to keep these channels in mind. And I'm talking about TikTok, Instagram, YouTube Shorts, YouTube itself, and Twitter. sorry, I can't call it X. It's Twitter. on TikTok, we have an approach that is so useful for indies, because on TikTok you can be you, you can be real, you can be real indie, and people are gonna love it. On Instagram is the perfect place for you to share your creative process. It can be through reels or with some concept art, some screenshots. On YouTube Shorts, it's I like to mention that, because when we mention a new social media platform, people usually think like, okay, I have to create new content now. No, you don't. You don't need to. You can recycle and reuse some content from other platforms, like from TikTok, from Instagram, on YouTube Shorts, and you don't have to create new thing for that. YouTube is basically the place for hero pieces, like trailers, gameplay trailers, or if you are up to a dev blog video, is the perfect place for that. And on Twitter is, I think, is the most versatile place where you can share updates, cross promotion, pointing people to other platforms, even hashtags. I know it sounds weird mentioning hashtags in 2024, but it is still a thing, and I will talk about those shortly. And the last one, don't overlook. I know Facebook, it's still there, and most of people think it's basically dead, but it's not. Facebook has an older audience, but if your game is looking for a plus 35-year audience, maybe that's a good platform to keep an eye on. Okay, so we talked about being indie, platforms, and social media. But now it's time to talk about being unconventional. And I decided to bring two good examples here. The first one is from Greenheart Games. This one is Patricia. Patricia, I don't know if you are here watching this live stream, but she's the community manager of Greenheart Games. And she had an idea. Aya drops, and she got 121,000 views on TikTok with this video. It's basically she being super emotional about the release of their Steam page. And yeah, people connected super, super well with this idea, because, you know, it's real. It's how people really feel about when they see their Steam page live, finally. And another example that I decided to bring it today, it's from Chucklefish, and it's an unconventional way to promote a sale. Instead of using the usual key art with the percentage of discount that we are offering, we decided to do something different. And we decided to use a meme, of course, pretty simple, right? But a meme that express the passion about a game. And this is the perfect one. And we decided to summarize the game in like all in caps to make people understand how good this game is. And we got 70,000 impressions in one single post. And when you see this post on Twitter, you might not realize it's like a sale. But then we included a link for our Steam page mentioning the sale, all in caps as well, of course, as a reply. And it was an unconventional way to promote our game on sale on Steam. And I think these two examples, they are good ones to show how good it is to embrace the quirkiness and stay true to your party persona at the same time. And something that I like to mention and ask myself all the time is like, how can we make it more authentic? Because it helps a lot the process of being unconventional. And don't be afraid. Dip your toe in the water. I promise you, it's not that deep. And when you publish the first unconventional piece, you're going to see the reaction of your community, and the other piece is going to be way, way easier. Okay, so time to talk about numbers and make the wish list grow. Okay, make sure to point people to your game page to increase visibility and drive conversion at launch. Why? So you don't want to make your marketing efforts go down the drain. And we don't want to have like a TikTok video with, I don't know, 100,000 views and people don't realize which game is that. So make sure to point people to your game page. And I would like to introduce you to the Fabulous Five. And it's basically five items that are going to help you to increase your wish list numbers. First one, playable demo. No secrets on this one. First one, make sure that you are offering our official feedback discussion thread on Steam and or can be on Discord as well. Number three, live stream sessions. This is super, super important on Steam. Number four, hashtag trends. Remember, I'm going to talk about that shortly. Number five, CTA in every time you can. For those who doesn't know what CTA is a call to action. So make sure you are using that every time you can, of course, with wisdom. But I decided to bring this graph here to explain a learning that we had at Chucklefish. You can see two spikes there, right? The first one we got during a playable demo at a digital event on Steam. And the second one, the bigger one, it was through a tweet using the hashtag Wishlist Wednesday. It was last year, this hashtag was starting coming up. And then we decided to create a very simple tweet with some screenshots and the link of our Steam page and explaining in a super straightforward way about our game. And we got an incredible number of wishlists in just one day with one tweet. Again, zero budget. Okay, talking about the Fabulous Four. Remember demos and events? Yeah. Never underestimate the power of events. And when you work with indie games, we have a good opportunity with digital events because we don't have to pay a bunch of money to rent a booth at a physical event. We have so many good digital events throughout the year. So make sure that you are including those in your roadmap. They can be the helping hand that your game might need. Cool. Okay. Time to power up the press relations. I'm going to talk about three very, very important things that a lot of people don't realize. Press kits. You would be shocked at how many great games don't have a press kit. And again, a press kit can be something super, super simple. We are talking about video footage, logos, cool screenshots, GIFs, planet platforms, key info about your game. All the visual good stuff to make it easy for people to talk about your game. You can just gather everything you have already, put that in a zip file, and that's all. Second one, content creators. I know it's really tempting and frustrating at the same time to try to reach out to some big content creators. But sometimes it's way better to create relations with smaller content creators who are truly engaged with your game than big ones. So make sure that you are reaching out to content creators who share your values and are truly interested in learning more about your project. And last one, the importance of establishing connections. No man is an island. Team up with the right people. Behind every project lies a story waiting to be told. Don't think your story is not that important or anything else, because it is super important. And with these three main things, you're going to have a way better relationship with press and also with content creators. Okay, so it's time to analyze and adapt. As no as changing the wheel while driving. Yeah, I know that feeling. So I decided to bring four important points here, and I'm going to go over each of them. First one, why is important to track key metrics? Most people don't know what to do with metrics and numbers. I get that. But once you learn how to analyze numbers, things will be easier and you understand how to adapt your strategy. So make sure that you have a target to measure your success, like can be a wishlist target, impressions on your Steam page, number of followers, views. It depends. But pick one and make sure that you have this metric as a main target for you. It's going to help you measure success and also give you a sense of progression. Second one, stay agile. What does that mean? Oh, well, shit happens, basically. And you have to embrace the change and explore new options while the problem is happening. So when you stay agile, you find new opportunities and you overcome the obstacles. And sometimes you only be able to find a new opportunity when something changes. So don't be afraid when things go out of the planet. Third one, A and B tests. This one is one of my favorite ones as well. Because, I mean, don't be afraid of trying to say the same thing in two different ways. It will help you maximize your marketing efforts. And you also get valuable insights when you test new things. You can improve conversion rates and maximize your marketing efforts when you try to say the same thing in two different ways, like the sale example that I mentioned earlier. And last one, more than numbers. Numbers don't mean that much when you have no retention. And it's important to leverage your game by collecting qualitative feedback and sentiment from your audience. Getting great numbers of views, it's amazing. Yeah, can be. But it's super important to understand what people are enjoying about your game, what they are suggesting to adapt or adjust. And these are the things that are not included in the numbers. Cool. Okay. So we reached the last part of this masterclass. It's time to roll up the sleeves. You have your game. Okay, check. You know which questions you should answer. Check. You have a master plan. Check. And only two people on your team to help you deliver that. Okay, don't panic. Here are the three main takeaways of this masterclass. And I think would help you to for us to summarize everything we discussed it now. First thing, prioritize. It's super important to do the homework to maximize the efficiency and achieve the goals to the right audience. Don't be afraid to say, no, we are not going to do that because we are prioritizing this instead. It's way better to prioritize your energy and your resources to the right things. Second one, communicate. Convey your message, your ideas, and your values through the correct channels to make it happen. It's super important to analyze and making sure that you are using the correct platforms in the correct tone and the correct approach to your audience. And the last one, connect. Create these engaging relationships and interactions to increase the affinity and the loyalty for your game. This is something that it's super, super important, and it's really hard to get. But I believe in the indie gaming industry, we have been doing that way, way better than in the AAA industry. Yeah. Now I think it's time for questions. I have been talking a lot, and I think it's time for us to discuss a little bit more.
You did phenomenal. Thank you so much. All right, we do actually have a few questions. Take your time on answering them. So we have a bit of time left. So let's pop up our first one. Okay. From YouTube. I have a team of 7 people developing a game. We are a new indie studio from Brazil. We're trying to reach horror game audience. Any tips of social media preferred for this market?
Good one. Okay. Hi, Thomas. In terms of horror game audience, I would recommend 2 platforms. First one, Reddit, because we have like some good subreddits focusing on horror games and horror stuff in general, especially like movies, series, and also TikTok. TikTok is a really good one because at the beginning, I think most of people were thinking like TikTok is only for Gen Z, but it has changed. So if I could recommend, I would give you these 2 options as main platforms.
All right, let's move on to our next question. From YouTube, do you know if email marketing is efficient for marketing and PR for indies and or B2B with indie devs?
Yes, it is. I can say that. But it also depends on which kind of email marketing you are sending out. Because, I mean, when you are indie game studio, don't treat your email marketing or your newsletter like big companies, because you have the freedom to, you know, be more approachable, be more real. So it depends on the way that you convey the message that you want to deliver through the email marketing.
All right. Let's get our next one going. So from YouTube, hey, any tips for when in the process line of a project, or even if, should a team hire a marketing specialist? That's a good one.
Really good one. I wish everyone asked that to yourself. But yeah, it depends. It depends. But basically, it's really good to have at least one person from marketing with you since the beginning. And I'll explain you why. When you are developing your game, even when it's in the early stages, these marketing specialists can help you in different ways. This person can help you reach out to some investors and also to people that would be interested to put some money on your game. And also, this person will help you decide in which platforms you should release your game. And having these answers being answered since the beginning, it's way better and the process would be super smooth. And it's good because you have this person understanding the development process since the beginning. It's I feel that sometimes it's hard for developers to onboard a marketing person because they get so used to the development process. And when someone just pops up and, okay, I want to sell this game, and this person doesn't have all the context from the development. And we are indie game studios and indie game developers here. The story behind the development, it's so, so valuable. And having this person with you since the beginning is like the best of all the worlds.
All right. Make sure I'm not muted. Let me go ahead and pull the next one up on YouTube. Can this entire process you went through be put into crowdfunding? Any tips for focusing on crowdfunding?
Okay, I don't have much experience in crowdfunding, but if I could give you some advice, would be most of what we talked about today could be applied into crowdfunding, especially when we were talking about the homework and the questions. I think they would be super helpful to make sure that you are targeting the correct audience and you are delivering what this audience expects. So in terms of crowdfunding, I think the homework is pretty important, and also the tips that we discussed about having a Steam page or not. And but unfortunately, I don't have much experience in crowdfunding specifically.
Okay, our next question from YouTube. Do you think marketing specialists should niche down, maybe focus on a specific genre of game?
Tricky one. I think it depends. On the product that you are trying to sell and convey, because some games are super niched, and of course you have to target a specific genre, but it depends on the product actually. I had the chance to work with some games that were very, very specific in terms of audience, and you understand that your game gonna work in specific platforms. For example, we realized that on Discord people were super, super engaged, but not that much in other platforms. So instead of trying to focus 100% in a specific genre, I would say that would be better for you to pick up the platforms and the social platforms that you want to be on.
All right, we have another question. This one is from Twitch. Okay. Which platforms can you recommend to connect with streamers and YouTubers? Keymailer, terminals, or someone else?
Okay. It's gonna sound super silly, but it's true. It's way simple than you think. Most of streamers and YouTubers, they are on TikTok. Make sure that you are following them there. And if they are interested on you, which they probably will, they will follow you back. And then you have the message button. And then you can just say like, hey, hi, hello. And it's a good point to start creating this relationship, because sometimes you admire a streamer or a content creator and you think this person share the same values that you and your team, and then you can create this, you know, this relationship saying that, hey, we have this game, do you like to play it sometime, or do you want to try it and give us some feedback? This kind of simple things, it's very, how can I put that? It's way more effective than trying to, you know, find tricky ways to reach out to content creators and YouTubers. So yeah, that would be my suggestion.
Love it. All right, we actually have some more. Guys, if you have more questions, keep them rolling in, because
I'm loving having so much questions.
We have like 15 minutes left. So let's, if you have any, now is your chance to ask them. No silly questions here. All right, so let's move on. We have another one from YouTube. What is the content creation like for Reddit?
This is a really hard one to answer. And I will give you some context. As I said, I am from Brazil. And in Brazil, Reddit is not that popular. Not at all. Because Reddit, it's popular in English-speaking countries like US, UK, and in some parts of Europe as well, but not in Brazil. So for me, it was a huge challenge to understand how we could create content for Reddit. And I feel like I'm still learning a few things, but it's way better for you to be a person there instead of a company. And we have several subreddits, and they always have these rules like about not promoting yourself, not promoting your company. So you have to be very subtle in terms of how you can share things about your game. And something that we always advise for Reddit is it's way better for the developer as a person being there and share the progress of the game, or ask for some feedback in a specific subreddit. These kind of small snippets of content, I think I may say like that, it's way more engaging than trying to like, hey guys, I am releasing a game next week, wishlist now. It's not gonna work, and you're gonna have your post deleted. So it's the kind of work that you have to do a little bit per week, a little bit per day, and then you're gonna see the result by the end.
I have heard that it is very hard to navigate Reddit.
Yes,
specifically for the fact that if you come off as too promotion-y, that they will just ban you. Like, yes, the community hates that. So it's a very tricky terrain to navigate. Yes. All right, we have another question for you. From on YouTube, you said it's a good idea to have a marketing person in the team from the beginning. What functions could this person tackle in the making of the game while there is little to no content to publish? It's a good question.
Good one. Okay. I believe that when you are in the game studio, you have to hire people that wear different hats at the same time. With that in mind, I would recommend that if you're hiring a marketing person, make sure that this person feels comfortable in wearing different hats. For example, if this person is interested to help with the project development, or with the production side, I mean, we are talking about making games here. We know that we always have something to do. So I think it's more like the style and the way of work that this person gonna have, and making sure that you are aligned the expectations with this person since the beginning, because otherwise can be frustrating. This person can feel like, okay, I cannot promote this game. We are not announcing this game. What can I do? But I assure you, this person can help you a lot. Like, you can have, I'll give you some examples to be more clear. This person can start doing a marketing research, a competitor's research, a research about price and platforms, and with how many followers these competitors have on Steam, for example. And then you can have a better understanding in terms of how many units this game had when it was released. And I mean, it's a lot of things. And if you find a person who is comfortable wearing different hats, for example, and helping with production and project management would be super useful.
All right, let's move on to our next one. Although I am going to say, Sharky Shark, I see you. I know what type of bad shark stuff you get up to. All right, so our next one. On YouTube, are there topics or certain communities we should avoid when creating content for our games?
I wouldn't say that we shouldn't tackle some topics. Of course, we shouldn't talk about pretty bad topics that that don't share the same values that we have. When you decide to talk about some sensitive topics, for example, it's important to keep in mind how you're going to dialogue with your audience. For example, I know the gamer community. I'm talking about the gamer community in general. I don't feel like the indie gaming community is like that, okay? I know they are not very open to understand the how important pronouns are in gaming. And this is an example of a topic that's very delicate to talk about. But once you prepare and you know how to put this in the correct way to your audience, you won't have much problem, especially if you have built a community first and you're going to have your advocates there to, you know, support you. But I don't feel like you should not talk about specific topic.
Cancel culture is very much a thing. If you second guess anything that you're going to post, probably don't post it. If you ever had that moment of, should I say this? Should I do this? That enough should be a red flag to not post the content, because the last thing you want is cancel culture on you. All right. So our next question is from YouTube. Oh, nope. Never mind. We already did that one. Way to go, Ash, not doing stuff properly. We have another one on YouTube. If you were a indie game dev with no funds, but with a promising project, would you accept funding and marketing from a publisher or try finding a marketer to partner up with?
Would you accept funding and marketing from a publisher or try finding a marketer to partner up? I mean, I work on a publisher. I would say it would be better to accept funding and marketing from a publisher. And why? When you have a publisher since the beginning, it's way easier for you to have the support you need in terms of how you are going to deliver each milestone or each part of the game, and how you can make you can make sure that you are tracking everything you need throughout the entire project. You're gonna have people that are gonna support you on that, and it's way better than you just trying to find a marketer to partner up. Because I mean, when you are developing your game, you have so much to be worried about. So I understand that when you find a publisher that is interested to funding your game and also publishing your game, it's because this publisher truly believes in your project. And of course, you have to make the correct questions when you are signing or doing this agreement to make sure that you and the publisher have the expectations at the right place.
All right, we still have a few minutes left. So if anybody has any last minute questions, now is your time. Indy, you want to jump in here, hang out with us?
Sure, sure. I love this comment right here. Rage culture is the new marketing. You got to know who you're marketing to, and you got to know who you're talking to, whether you agree, disagree, or whatever. That's just, you know, that's just the way that it is, right?
Yes, exactly.
All right, well, let's close this banner right here. So here's a good question for you. What is your least favorite thing about your job?
Least favorite thing. Let me think. When I have to deal with annoying people online, I think that's the worst part, because even though I know it's just for my job, when I arrive at home, I still feel that with me. You know what I mean?
Totally can understand that.
You know?
Mindful meditation. Mindful meditation, right?
No, it doesn't work for me.
Sorry. Yeah.
I tried to tell Dan that the other day. I was like, look, my brain doesn't shut up enough to be able to do mindful meditation. He was like, no, Ash.
No.
You just focus on your breathing. Yeah, you just focus on your breathing. And then when your mind goes, you go, nope, I'm breathing. And then... And you force yourself to do it over and over and over and over.
I think I have to try more.
Probably. So how do you deal with that? How do you deal with like the, and you too, Ash, how do you deal with that when a bunch of garbage is thrown at you at work and you're upset afterwards? How do you handle that kind of empathy?
I'll let Tammy go first.
Okay. I think at the beginning of my career, it was hard. Until I understood that most of people, of course, there are pretty awful people out there, but most of people, sometimes they are just, they're angry because of something, maybe something else that it doesn't have anything to do with you. Mm-hmm. And you are just the thing that they are pointing that anger to. And I remember once I was working for Ubisoft, and we had like a huge problem with one of the Rainbow Six servers, and people couldn't play the game and they were like super angry. And this person typed a super awful tweet, and I decided to reply in a very kind way. And I was pretty surprised when I saw the reply after that. And it was the same person saying, "Hi, I'm sorry. I was angry. Thanks for replying." And I was like, Yeah, sometimes people only need a little bit of love, you know, and they will realize sometimes. That on the other side, it's a real person as well.
Yeah, sometimes they only take a little bit of love, but sometimes they're just there to purposely troll.
There will always be trolls, but yes, I think a lot of time the internet, people just disassociate the fact that there's human beings on the other side of that screen. So they lash out. And I always just try to be like, you know what? Maybe they're having a bad day. We all have bad days. And I try to give everybody the benefit of the doubt and then treat them how I want to be treated and not treat them as me reacting. Because you reacting is never going to solve anything. It's just going to fuel the fire. Mm-hmm. So I always am just like, maybe they're having a bad day. And then if it gets to the point where they're just not listening and they're treating me really poorly, I move on from it because, you know, you're not always going to be able to change people's opinions. And you know, some people are literally just out to troll. They're out to just watch the world burn. So at that point, I remove myself from it. And it's just like, you do you, bud.
Mm-hmm. I don't have to look at it.
Yeah, it's not my problem now. Like, you're beyond helping. But everybody on the internet, just try to be mindful that there are people on the opposite side of the screen. Words do hurt. Even like the thickest of thick skinned people, it still hurts and it still sticks with us.
Mm. That's the biggest lie ever. Sticks and stones may break my own bones, but words will never hurt me. That is a bunch of malarkey. No. Did you want to ask that one question?
We can. No, I was going to say I was a streamer for years. And some of the like best troll comments stick with me because they're so funny. Like I had a kid come on and say, why is your forehead the size of a McDonald's billboard? I was like, that's amazing because it's true. Because I have a massive forehead. But it was one of those like, it was so funny that all these years later, I still think of that kid and I wonder how he's doing. Mm-hmm. All right, we have one more question.
I used to like people be like, oh, you're fat, or make a fat joke. And I'm like, is that the best you can do?
Yeah.
Like, you take something that's obvious and point it out. Woo, good for you. Good for you.
All right, let's squeeze in one last question.
Okay.
How can you keep your community alive while you're developing a big feature that doesn't give you anything showable in a short period of time?
Good one. I understand that because I've been there too. My suggestion for you is keep part of your community super close to you, and you're going to know which ones are the most engaged ones. And I know it's hard, but try to show a little bit something sometimes. You don't have to promise anything, but you know, sometimes just give like a sneak peek, and it can happen like, I don't know, you don't have to promise anything, but at least something, I don't know, once each 3-4 months, who knows, but this will make people remember about your project and make sure that you are working on this project. And also remember the part that we were talking about, being real, being approachable. Share about your journey so far. Share about how you are working on at the moment, and people gonna listen to that. So even though you cannot like show actionable things, you can show different things. Like an experience.
All right. Thank you so very much for your time today, Tammy. We all loved it. Mm-hmm. So appreciate you having you on the show. Next up, we have Jay and Omar. They're going to be doing pitch deck reviews with Firestoke Games. Stay put. They're going to be here in just a matter of seconds.
That's the end of Indie Game Business Conference.
Last one. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone, for the questions, too. Bye. I'm not touching anything, Ash.
Okay, I will. Bye.
Bye.